the Sunday Morning Linux Review with Mary Tomich, Tom Lawrence, and Tony Bemis as the Beaver.
This is the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This is episode 239, Fresh Looks. This is Mary Tomich.
And Tom Lawrence.
That's right. And this is our Fresh Looks episode, as I just said. And this episode, we're taking a look at discrete Linux.
Yes.
We'll be taking a discrete look at discrete Linux, Tom.
All about privacy.
Yeah, it is. And that's right. It's a distro review, once again, for like the first time in 2 months, something like that, because we had all those
Microsoft stuff.
So those of you who are not fans of Microsoft, I know some of you might not be, you'll be happy to know that we're back on track with our distro. Although I kind of like those reviews or those interviews.
Yeah.
But anyway, so as I said, we're taking a look at discrete Linux. Now, first thing I noticed is that discrete is not spelled as Tom, you and I would typically spell it.
I might have spelled it that way before, but it was a typo.
That's right. It would be. Yeah, it's got a few E's in there. D-I-S-C-R-E-E-T-E Linux. Now, the one thing to know about this this project is that it formerly was known as the Ubuntu Privacy Remix, which, of course, I didn't pay attention to it because it had the word Ubuntu in it, and I just thought, another Ubuntu distro, so I'm not going to look at it. But since it changed its name, and I just thought it warranted a look, and so that's what we're going to do today. I've got a couple things, and by the way, too, it fancies itself. According to what I read on the interwebs, it fancies itself as a protected environment against Trojan-based surveillance. So that sounds really, really good. Now, one thing, too, to note is that I don't believe, at least on the version that I looked at, they didn't have a production-ready. I think they were still in their alpha releases, but they were still in their beta releases. So this is not kind of a final release of it, but it had come along far enough. And as I went into it and was examining the different features and capabilities of it, it became clear to me that it certainly warranted a look at on the show. Now, it's a derivative of Debian, and they made that change, I think, last year, back in August. They went from being based on Ubuntu to based on Debian. And the kernel that I looked at was kernel 4.7.1, or at least the kernel that was in this release. And then the review desktop is GNOME. Kind of GNOME 3, 2. It's really, I think it's 3, but it kind of had some elements of 2.
And that's kind of where Ubuntu's going. Now that they're dropping Unity, they're switching to GNOME.
So anyway, but I went ahead and downloaded the ISO, and as is standard for me, or traditional, we'll say, kind of the legacy way I do things, is I will throw it on a DVD, even though I think most people these days use a USB stick. But I went ahead and burnt the ISO to a DVD, and of course, I didn't read the directions first. I just went ahead and threw it in, thinking, oh, I'm going to go into a live environment, and then I'll go ahead and install it. No, that's not how it works. I went ahead then and read the directions and found out that you really need to put it on a USB stick. And, of course, I did that, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes. But anyway, one thing to note is that it does boot to a grub menu, and there are four language options, and I thought the language options were kind of interesting. First of all, you have English, which was expected. And, that sounds arrogant. Not expected, but...
we're used to that language.
Yeah, we're used to that language. Allegedly, it's my first language.
Yep.
I do speak Spanish. And then German, or Deutsch, as it was referred to on there. And then the other two, Turkish and Kurdish.
Oh.
So, yeah, I thought that was a little interesting.
I probably makes sense, because discrete privacy, Turkish, they had some things where they weren't concerned about privacy.
Yeah, I would think so, especially with the guy that's running Turkey these days.
Yeah, exactly.
He sounds a little... heavy-handed. Yeah. But anyway, there's also an option to check the media for defects, which is, I think, fairly standard in a grub menu. And then you have an opportunity to run it as root. And, of course, that line also comes with a directive to read the manual first. Or not to read the first manual, RTFM, is that means read the first manual?
Read the first manual.
Yeah, there you go.
There we go.
That's what I always thought that meant. But I went ahead and chose English, not surprisingly. Within a few minutes, I was rewarded with a discrete Linux live environment. Now, running it that way is going to take advantage of none of the features and capabilities of discrete Linux, and that's what I found out. So I went ahead and moved it over to a USB thumb drive, and it's really nice about their website is they provide you with the instruction to do it, and all I had to do was customize it for my environment. So it's your typical DD, blah, blah, blah. So I went ahead and did that, and gave it another try. One thing to note about the Grub boot screen is typically when you boot into Grub for a distro, you will have so many seconds before it automatically will take the default. Usually it's what is highlighted, the first entry. For discrete Linux, they don't do that. They have disabled that feature. So what happens is if you don't make a selection, it's just going to stay there on the Grub screen. And I found that out because usually what I do is I
will just sits there.
Fire it up and I'm doing something else while I'm waiting for the distro to load. And
you're like, what is it, stuck?
It beeps. Yeah, well, what it does very helpfully is it beeps. So you look over and I say, hey, it's still on Grub. Hey, it's still on Grub. Well, I have to press the key. So I went ahead and did that and ended up booting into the environment, the desktop environment. So the other thing, too, is that you also get a chance to take a look at the little background picture they've got. So they have this little puppy nose to nose with a turtle. And of course, the turtle's in its shell. And I thought that was kind of cute and representative of what they're trying to convey as far as this particular distro. But before I delve into the workings of discrete Linux, let's take a look at what's included. Now, those are the standard defaults I like to take a look at. The desktop itself is really nothing too fancy. It's kind of a light, stripy wallpaper with the standard GNOME toolbars. I was very impressed because it handled the Broadcom chip. You remember me talking about some distros, they crap out on it, and I end up just slapping a wired connector to my router just to go ahead and, you know, finish it. Nope. Discrete Linux handled it very, very nicely. So the defaults, it uses Firefox ESR, which of course is that extended version where I think it's sort of like
And is it an enhanced security one? Is that what that is?
Extended security release?
It's something.
It's
I'm at a loss right now.
Yeah, no, and that's fine. No, it reminds me, it's like extended support release. It's one of the. That's really what it is. But interestingly enough, it wasn't listed. Usually, when you go into the menu category or the subcategory, when you click the menu icon, you have your internet menu category. Then you go in and you can see what various applications and programs are listed there. Firefox wasn't listed there, which I thought was a little odd. And maybe that has to do with the super security aspect of this distro, but it wasn't there. However, LibreOffice was there, 5.2.3.3, not the latest version. However, it was all of the aspects and components of LibreOffice. So that was nice to see that came with it. And the file manager's Nemo. And there, I didn't see a mail client. Now, there may have been one in there, and maybe it was set up like the browser. It's not available. You have to go find it. But I didn't really see one. Didn't see one there. Now, the Discrete Linux website advises you to set up a crypto box. So that's one of the first things that you do. And because I was running it off my thumb drive, I thought, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and do that. Well, the first thing I set up, I thought, I'm not going to set up a crypto box. I'm just going to set up a file. Now, this is another instance of me not reading the manual. I just went ahead and plunged onward. And, you know, there are times when you really need to read something first before you go ahead and try to set something up. Because it set it up perfectly fine. And there was my little crypto file. And I could go in and blah, blah, blah. Well, when it came time to reboot, that thing was gone. Well, then I found out that I had to set up my crypto container, my crypto box first, and then I can put stuff in it. And what happens is that, and by the way, to do all of these, if you take a look at the application launcher with the various categories, that they have an entire security category that contains all of these tools. But what I have to do first is go through the crypto wizard and not only to set up that file, but to set up the containers that I did.
Yeah,
do.
And I noticed that they're using the standard Lux encryption, which is really strong. That's actually, I use that as well for all my Linux stuff that I have encrypted.
Yeah, that is, as a matter of fact, I think they had a couple of other options, but that's the default. And that's
it looks like
I chose.
They support VeraCrypt as well.
Yeah, and TrueCrypt was in there
too. Yeah, VeraCrypt, I believe, will import TrueCrypt.
Okay.
So it does have support, so you can import your TrueCrypt stuff.
Yeah. So let's see here. Now, for the uninitiated, a crypto box is just simply a little space that's used in encrypting data. Well, they, according to the stuff I pulled out, at one end of a communication link and decrypting it at the other. But anyway, in this setting here, the crypto box is basically kind of a, I'll call it a container, but not in the way of Docker.
Right.
I mean, it's just a storage space for your stuff.
Yeah, it's more of like a storage container, not a Docker instance container.
Precisely. So, I went through the Crypto Wizard to set this thing up. And there, the first thing it asked me is whether I wanted to wanted my encrypted container to be set up as a container file, which is what I initially selected. And as I said, once I rebooted, because I didn't read all of the instructions before I did this, I ended up it disappeared because it's not in the persistent area of the distro. So anyway, you can set up as a container file. You can also use the entire data medium, which is the USB stick, for the created volume. Or I could set up my volume based on the free space available. Now, each choice has its own set of questions on the succeeding setup screens. I think there are like a total of four screens. First one is the basic settings, and that's the type of container, and those are the options I just mentioned. Then the next one will take you to the volume selection, and that's where you can name your container. You can identify how much size you want to allocate for it, and then also your volume label. Your encryption options that we just talked about, those are on the third screen, and that's where you also create your password. You select your encryption algorithm and your hash algorithm. And then volume creation, that includes the whole cryptographic setup, and that's where, you know, you move your cursor around to help create a more secure...
Yeah, create some entropy.
Yeah, exactly. So I thought, oh, heck. I moved it for 10 seconds and thought, this is just a review. I'm going to be getting
just a review.
This at the end.
I'm not trying to protect myself against a nation state actor.
Yeah. So anyway, but you can certainly move it around diligently for a whole minute if you choose. Let's see. And we just talked about, you know, I mentioned it here and we've already talked about it, the various available encryption formats, Lux, VeraCrypt and TrueCrypt, that there's an option available to create volumes for automatic backups. Now, I decided not to go that route. I just simply wanted to go in and just kind of test the basics, you know, as far as the active setup of my container and or file. Let's see. Oh, by the way, too, I want to mention something in the whole password, that whole password creation, because it was a little annoying. I didn't understand why they did this, but here's what happened. It was very informative to tell me I had to create a minimum of 20-character password. So the first time I did it, I thought, okay, I'm going to hit A 20 times. And then I realized, well,
that's not.
I mean, it's on the surface, it sounds easy. But when it comes to it, you're going to have to meticulously count that. Because if you put 19 in...
It's not going to work.
You're not... Yeah, it's going
to
be a problem.
Yeah, it's easier to come up with a string together sentences.
Yeah, I put in my first, middle, last name, and then my birthday. And that worked like a charm because luckily it was over 20 characters. But here's the problem is before I got to that point, it just said it had to be 20 characters. Now, I think what would have been more helpful is if it listed all the criteria because I gave the requisite 20 characters when I did the A initially. Well, then it said, okay, you need an uppercase and a number.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, come on, you should have told me that earlier.
Yeah.
So anyway, just a note that that is required even though the password screen doesn't say that. So yeah, it had to be one non-letter character. God, that wasn't easy to say at all. Let's see here. So now, after I created my my encrypted volume container file and rebooted, as I said earlier, it was lost because I didn't properly set that up and have it inside this a quote unquote container. And by the way, too, when it sets these up, it goes into media. The name of the user and then the container itself. So it's not set up in your home directory per se. I think there's probably a symlink to it.
Okay.
But it sets it up in media. And
that's
kind of reminds me of.
Well, you know what? That's actually how it mounts. And it's I don't know if it's Ubuntu or Debian or both that do this.
I was just going to.
Things
that's
mount
exactly
under media.
What I was going to say because I've noticed that on my home system, my KDE Neon system, things mount under my name,
yes.
But it's under media.
Yep.
So that's probably where the. Link is. But anyway, so that was fine. So let's see, where was I? Oh, yeah. So you have the option. Once you provide the password to open this thing up when you reboot, you have an option to have the system forget the password immediately. Now, there are plenty of jokes there, but I'm going to leave that to the listeners as far as forgetting a password immediately. You can also remember it till you log out, or you can remember it forever. So I went ahead and I think I left it with the default, which I think is forget password immediately. And as a matter of fact, one of the times, and I don't know if I think my laptop is starting to go because I lost my screen. I mean, the screen went blank. The whole thing just shut down. I thought, wow, that's great feedback and punishment for you. Not only is it going to forget your password immediately, it's going to shut your whole system down. And so I hit my power button. I was back up. So I think that laptop is...
It was intense.
That was my
it.
Original Bemis testing laptop. I think okay. It's slowly going down the crapper. But anyway, so yeah, but you do have three options as far as how that password is handled by the system. So you can, of course, the least secure one is remember it forever.
Yeah.
Oh, let's see here. So then once I successfully enter the password, then you're presented with this little dialog box. So you don't really have access to your volume yet. There's a little dialog box that appeared telling me that the volume I was attempting to access appeared to be an extended volume and whether I wanted to make use of the settings associated with that. And I chose yes. Now, let me back up. There is, and I forgot, I found it this morning, there is a mail client in there, which I think is a standard known one. It's Evolution.
Okay.
Because until I found that out, I was getting this little note that said, failed to stop Evolution. Of course, I'm thinking, oh, my God, there are so many jokes there.
That's great.
Yeah. But the thing of it is that Evolution wasn't capitalized. So I thought, is there some kind of a process of evolution, no pun intended, as far as this whole thing that I'm doing? It was a little confusing to me, but I did find out that they do have Evolution, the mail client Evolution in there. So
okay.
Going back up to what I said earlier, there is a mail client. I forgot, and this morning I was kind of hurrying to try to wrap this up, and I forgot to go back up and make that change. So heads up, everybody. But anyway, so that was the next notice. It says, failed to stop Evolution. We'll skip loading Evolution data from the extended container. So I'm thinking, well, okay. And then after that, at the bottom of the screen, once I clicked OK, because I think that was my only option, it said, opening successful. So I was happy. It said, extended volume opened successfully. And then all of a sudden, I had an icon on my desktop that had a little lock on it that was open. And then the name of my container was there. And I clicked it, and sure enough, it opened up. I went through and I tested. I created a file, LibreOffice Writer file. I put it in there. Ended up rebooting, and sure enough, it was still there. I had to go through the open password, you know, that whole process. But it was there. And then I had also created one outside of it. And, of course, as I had indicated earlier about the lack of persistence, it was gone. So... my thinking, you know, as far as anybody who's going to be using this when it hits the production ready phase, is that what you might want to do is change the default setting if you're in Writer, change it to, if it makes sense for you, to the container that you're using so that it defaults when it opens it up automatically, it's sitting there. And then you can then from there go in and create an additional folder to put your files and your spreadsheets or whatever you're using. But otherwise, you're going to have to go in and click and find it and put it there, because if you just drop it into the default LibreOffice location, it's going to be gone unless you move it. But interestingly enough, if you right-click on it, you do have the ability to encrypt it. But the problem is that it's sitting outside of that container, so it's going to be gone. So.
Oh, yeah, because it's not persistent right to the file system.
Exactly. So just a heads up on that.
Careful where you put your data.
Yeah. Yeah.
Read the manual before you place data.
Yep, exactly. Precisely. And then I also decided to create a file, a small little crypto box file that was inside this container, and that worked fine because once I opened up my container and I clicked on it, I had to provide the password to that, and then that was available. But the process of going through it completely mimicked the larger container, and I had that prompt about the extended volume, and then and I thought, well, I'm just going to go through and hit the defaults, and so I did, and then I got an error message that I could only have one at a time, because if you recall, that larger one, which I aptly named Boxo Stuff, already was making use of it. So it would seem to me that the developers or the folks that are working on this, it might be nice to have some script or some part of a script check and see if they're already in use, so that if somebody, so that either the user is presented with an option to do that, rather than just thinking, oh, you know, and again, some people are already going to know about this, but for myself, it was just me going through the default. So I think that would be helpful for them. But anyway, so once I got that error, I went back and just tried it again, and then just didn't I clicked no then, and then I was good to go. So the other thing too, you do have the ability to create GPG keys in Discrete Linux without a surprise. I mean, no surprise. So I went ahead and created a key. I had a and again, this was before I read the manual. I proudly created my keys. I did not put them in the little encrypted container, so oh. I lost them.
Whoops.
Yeah,
and,
so. Yeah,
and there's no getting that back. That's,
yeah, no.
Yeah,
there,
not
there
anything
wasn't.
You encrypted
so
with them is gone, too.
Yep. So, anyway, yeah, so I just want you to know that there's a reason why that thing is set up that way. It's for you to put your stuff in and not just inside the standard home directory, because that all gets cleaned out. So, and again, that's a plus as far as the security perspective goes. Oh, let's see here. I talked about yep, I've already talked about all the, you know, the file versus the container and all of that. By the way, too, I don't know if you've ever heard of Figaro's password manager. That requires you to sing your passwords. Figaro. I'm just kidding. But anyway, it's just somebody named it that. It's actually a GNOME application, GNOME, and that allows you to securely store your passwords. So that's available there. They're encrypted, and that uses the Blowfish algorithm.
Okay.
So just so that you're aware of that. Now, what's really nice about this program is, despite the fact that it's got security in mind, it also has functionality in mind, too. At least that was my take on it, because it comes fully stocked with quite a few applications. You've got the LibreOffice, that whole suite of things. It also includes, in the accessories category under the launcher, the app launcher menu, VirtualBox is there. So you've got VirtualBox. Now, my question then becomes, if you're going to use that, how are you going to set that up? Because does that just simply go away? I didn't take the time to create a VirtualBox area and that whole process.
Yeah.
So it would seem to me that if you're going to do that, you might be putting it inside that container. Time tracker, that the GNOME time tracker, it can be used to keep track of the amount of time you spend on different things you do, like your password, your 20-character minimum password. But that's available. They also have, I think this was in the Office category, there's something called Planner. It's for those who feel like managing a project or two, it's a whole project management. They've got quite a few tools. Inkscape, Scribus, and SimpleScan are there. You know, again, because I think that it seems to me you've got the option of encrypting this entire thing. So what you're probably going to do is just encrypt all of it, and then that would allow you to go back in and access the material that you created, the documents or files and graphics that you may have created in an earlier session. KMyMoney Evolution, as I said, I found that under Office.
Hey, KMyMoney, I've been using it for years.
Yeah, it's there.
I think I have 5 years of data in it now.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's still chugging along.
Still, the database is big now.
Yeah, I bet it is. What do they use for database back end for that?
They support putting it into like MySQL and some other options.
Okay. SQLite?
I think that might be one of the options.
Okay.
I'm still using it as a file because I'm not sharing it. So it creates its own database file.
Oh, a flat file kind of?
Yeah, kind of their own internal file they have.
Mm-hmm.
So.
All right. But anyway, yeah, LibreOffice and that. Then they also had something called FontViewer. It looks like this is a GNOME tool. Now, I was hoping for something a little bit more. But the utility does live up to its name. It allows you to view the installed fonts on there. I'm used to, there's a font viewer in KDE. What's nice about it is that I have a folder that has hundreds of fonts. And what I do is I point it at that folder, and then I scan, and I find one I like, and then I can install it from a button right there.
Oh, nice.
That's very nice. And this doesn't seem to have it, but if you're just looking to view fonts, if you want to see of the installed fonts, which one you want to select, it definitely lives up to its job. It also includes VLC. In addition to the normal GNOME tools, it has VLC already installed. And then under System Tools, it's got GR Sync. So syncing, which I think is a GNOME rsync tool.
Okay.
I believe that's what that means. So it's nice. And also under System Tools, it's got something called Collect Logs. Now, what this is, at least what it appeared to me to be, is a script that generates a BZ2 file, so that's a compressed file, of collected logs from VarLog, as well as a CP info file, and also command CMD line file from proc, from the proc directory. So those are also generated. And then two other files were included in this BZ2 file of logs, and that's PSTree and LSMod. So I guess it lets you know what modules are installed in the kernel and your process tree. So it seems kind of helpful. I like the fact that it was just one click and I instantly had all of this material. Now, obviously, because I hadn't done much on the system, the log files were pretty darn small, but it's nice to know that it's there. Let's see here. So, as far as being a tool for the security conscious, I think that when Discrete Linux does come out with this production version, I think it certainly makes good sense to give it a try. I think you want to make sure that if you are going to be using it in a production environment, you're going to be working with graphics and this type of thing, and you want to do so securely, make sure that you've got yourself properly set up so that you don't lose a lot of work because you didn't place it in the proper area in that encrypted container, because, as I said before, everything in that home directory gets wiped out. And by the way, you don't put your, well, the default name for the home directory is called somebody. That's the default user, somebody. So that kind of cracked me up when I saw that. So anyway, I give it a fairly positive review. I've noted a couple of things there that I thought they really should think about, as far as that password information. And then also the just checking to see the extended volume information, or that if that functionality is already working, you can only use it once. And so that would save people a little bit of time. The website itself, I took a look. Tom, I know you're out there looking at it.
It looks really nice.
Yeah.
Great job.
They did a nice job on that website. I was able to really kind of move once I decided to read the manual. To read the first manual, I was able to successfully go through all of these steps and test this thing out. So I think it really warrants a look. Once they release the production version of this thing, it certainly looks like it'd be a nice system to try. So
yeah, it looks really cool. The website explains a lot more about.
You know what I like, Tom, is they give that little overview, and then you can click on the details and get the additional information.
Yes, they have the TLDR, and they have another like tab on the side where you can read all the details. Like, we're doing this, but if you need to know the details, well laid out website documentation is good. I'm seeing a trend in this, and some of these Linux websites. You'd see someone fork a distro or come up with something. Mm-hmm. There was very terse documentation. It was very light website, almost like the 90s looking websites. Now they put a lot, and it's what we want. We were talking about sync thing in the last episode. Their website's well documented, and it makes it so much better for the product, and the experience becomes better.
Yes, and I think especially when you're dealing with something involving security, I think it makes sense.
I want full disclosure
to get very specific and detailed about what the steps are. And as I said, I really just followed the steps there, and it worked out pretty well for me. So the distro is Discrete Linux, and we'll have a link to that site in the show notes. I promise.
All right. Mary should send it to me now, live on air. Email me, and I'll put it in there. Because if not, I put a little note that says, Mary's notes go here. And if people ask, I'm like, I don't have them.
at a minimum, I should include a link to the site. The Linux.
I do that. I always make sure I put a link to the site.
Oh, Tom, you're a godsend. Thank
you
so much.
Yes, we get that part done.
All right. So, anyway, you've been listening. Anything more, Tom, before we wrap it up?
No. I mean, you covered it really well. It's a little – it's neat. I was reading through the site and everything, and they have all the how-tos on here. They have a download, use, build, review, contribute. They have a how-to review. Did you read the how-to review, or you were skipping all the manuals?
I read what I needed to read to get through my stuff, but I'll certainly entertain comments from you on it.
Yeah, it's funny. They have a how to review the code. They actually have.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes, I saw that. I saw that.
I mean, this is neat.
And I thought, I won't be clicking in there.
Yeah, I mean, they have details on how to build it and everything else.
Yes, they do. You can manually build this yourself. If you wear a size extra large tinfoil hat, you can even build this yourself. And they've got the instructions.
Well, this goes back to what we were talking about with the new Debian release and the fact that 90% of it has that, you know, reproducible binaries where we know that source code. Here's those parameters. You can produce the binary and make sure that that source really did build it.
It's a great way to do it.
Yeah, because if you change one comment in the source, any little detail you change will change the binary output. So.
Yep. So, very good.
All right. Well, okay. That was Discrete Linux.
That's right. So you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This is episode 239, Fresh Looks, Discrete Linux. This is Mary Tomich.
And Tom Lawrence.
See you next time.
You've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. If you would like more information about this or other shows, go to smlr.us. Feel free to send comments to show@smlr.us or give us a call at 734-258-7009. I'm John Miller. If you don't like it, you can
bite my 8-bit metal ass. That's bite with a Y.